Chapter 13.
"We don't want any trouble," I said, as I eyed the business end of Mama B's double steel barrels.
"Biohackers know better than to try to fuck with my magpies. But just to be sure, Misfit, X-ray, check them for QR tats,"
the buxom Divine 2.0 said through her severe frown.
"I'm so, so, so sorry, Dave,"
Emma said with moist eyes as two broad-shouldered and barrel-chested Sturgis biker types with their old leather and patchy skullcaps came over and placed a meaty hand on each of our shoulders.
"I forgot that sometimes happens when I eat too fast."
"It's okay, honey," I soothed, as I squeezed her hand, and then I turned my glare on Mama B as the big dudes checked the backs of both of our necks. "We aren't biohackers. We don't even know what that is."
"They're both clear, Mama," said the guy I think was called Misfit.
"Gear rat,"
Mama B barked, and the guyliner punk with a crush on my Lizzie timidly came forward.
"Why does it seem as if our guests weren't even assessed before you let them into our humble abode?"
I'm sorry, Mama, but they showed up in a Model T. What fancy biohackers do you know who drive around in anything older than something from 2008?
Rat shifted on his feet and fluttered his twitchy fingers.
"I thought it went without saying."
Mama B huffed, but she clicked the safety on and lowered her sawed-off shotgun.
"You can't assume things like that. It puts all of us at risk."
"Sorry," Rat said and lowered his black-rimmed eyes. "I got excited."
"It's all right, sugar,"
Mama B said and patted his face. Sorry, but what puts you at risk?" I asked. I was glad the yellow-haired diva had lowered the gun, but I kept an eye on the piece still in her long-nailed grasp.
"What an odd question,"
Mama B said, and then handed the gun over to the other guy, X-Ray.
"I figured you were some hipster tribal types that occasionally pass through on their way to Canada, but I thought you all looked too pale."
Her bedazzled eyes tracked over the mix-and-match of clothing we got from the tribes of the Three Fires in the last alternate Michigan. "It's safe to say that all of us are locals, but you're right about us just passing through. My commune and I just want to learn about what you guys do here so we can implement your methods for ourselves after we leave. And we were also wondering if you guys might be willing to part with some tools or materials. We brought stuff to trade." I jerked a thumb over my shoulder and kept my face as open and honest as I could. I hoped my friendliness would keep her from asking any more questions until I knew a little more, especially about what made them so paranoid. That way, I could try to avoid putting my foot in my mouth.
"That's it, Davy. Don't give away all your cards at once,"
Saul's voice popped into my head as I was suddenly reminded of the time he taught me how to play poker.
"Keep the fuckers guessing. Now, go fish and hand me that screwdriver. I can fix this and teach you poker at the same time. It's not hard. I'm a fucking genius, Dave."
Come to think of it, I still don't really know how to play poker, but I got the gist of what he was trying to teach me, even though Saul really couldn't multitask like he said he could. And both of us ended up with scorched-off eyebrows as the microwave he was attempting to modify blew up.
"What kind of stuff for trade?"
Miss Haystacks asked as she rolled her weight to rest on one of her large leopard-printed hips.
"If it's anything with a computer chip, you can say sayonara, sugars. We don't accept that claptrap government spyware."
"Ah, I think I found the root of the paranoia then. Okay, well, then in full disclosure, I had to borrow a friend's Namshub device to get here," I said as I raised my hands, hoping Mama B wouldn't grab her gun again and come at me like a jungle punk Annie Oakley. "It was with a fake name and a spoof currency, though. I don't know how any of that works, just in case you still think we're some sort of hackers like you said. That's all my friend's area. But if it makes you feel any better, he hates the government and distrusts anything that tells him what to eat or analyzes his steaming morning dump for probiotics. His words, not mine. What I'm trying to say is, this guy didn't even trust the Fitbit his sister got him for Hanukkah. So if there was anything fucky on the goggles, he would have found it and obliterated it by now, I'm sure."
"Relax, Cupcake, I believe you,"
Divine 2.0 purred in her transatlantic staccato.
"If you were biohackers, drones from Microsoft would be here by now trying to advertise us to death to install their Wi-Fi. I trust what you say, but I'm still going to need my baby, Riggs, to scan them and make sure."
"No problem. The goggles are in the Model T, probably on the floor," I said, and pointed over my shoulder again with my thumb. "Do you want me to go get them?"
"No, that's all right. Rat can go."
the leopard-printed goddess then snapped her fingers, and the Richard Hell sequel snapped his itchy fingers into a salute. There's also a few crates and canvas sacks of stuff we brought to trade in the back, I added before Rat could get too far.
Kenny and Hyde, you both go with him,
Mama Bee ordered, and the three of them nodded.
Come find us in the container house.
Then they left through the double doors, and the yellow-haired diva turned her attention back on us.
Are you okay, sugar?
She asked Emma, and I finally noticed a few tears had fallen down my girlfriend's cheeks as she stared down at the spilled basket of strawberries she must have dropped during the commotion. Emma? I said, and pulled her closer as she began to shake.
Oh, silly of me, really,
Emma said through a hitching breath.
I'm just so relieved you don't think we're those hacker people. Gracious, I don't know why I'm crying. I'm also really sorry I destroyed your lovely bottle garden.
You're still under Scooby's purple haze, my little one. Emotions are intense for you,
Mama Bee said and petted Emma's heart-shaped face.
Don't worry at all about the garden. Come, let me tuck you to my Riggsy. It's dark and quiet in the container house where he likes to do his work. You can rest while we talk some more.
Divine 2.0 then turned on her platformed heels and walked us back through the courtyard.
Dave Meyer,
Acrasis said, and approached us from where she was standing by little raised planter boxes with little tents made out of more plastic sheeting and PVC pipe.
I have been learning various... Are you and Emma Newbold well?
We're fine, Razzie, but tell me all about it later, okay? I said with a smile. She nodded and took my hand so she could follow us as Mama Bee sauntered her full-figured hips toward the other end of the courtyard where the smaller Victorian mansion was. When she opened the large doors that looked like they belonged on a barn, I finally understood why Mama Bee kept calling it the container house. From the street, the second mansion to the left of the magpies seemed intact, but coming at it from behind revealed that only two of the four walls were left standing, the facade out front and the far wall. Inside, on what was left of the house's cement foundation, were two shipping containers stacked perpendicular on top of one another so that looking down from an aerial perspective, they would create an L shape. Along the back, where the rest of the Victorian house used to be, was a long fence topped with razor wire and secured on either end of the remaining brick with heavy-duty metal anchors. Whatever was kept in this part of the mansion's makeup was obviously valuable to this ragtag gang of corporate resistors.
Riggsy, baby, you in there?
Mama Bee said, and tippity-tapped her long painted nails against the metal ladder that led up to the top shipping container. A moment later, the door opened with a rusty creak, and a black man with torn corduroy bell-bottoms, a brown leather vest with no shirt, and a pair of heavily modified Namshub goggles on top of his excellent afro popped out on the extended platform and looked down. What's up, Mama? The afro-punk named Riggs said.
Got some new friends here that want to check out our operation, and maybe get a history lesson. Can we come up?
Mama Bee cocked her hand on her hip as she looked up at Riggs.
I got the goggles,
came the sound of Rat's voice just before he burst in from the courtyard.
Perfect timing,
the diva said, and held out her other hand for the Namshub device. Rat placed it in her palm and then scurried away back to whatever it was that he did to keep himself busy. After he slipped out, Mama Bee then tilted her head back up to Riggs.
Also, I got a device for you to scan.
Honeydew, and yet I'll never be through, Riggs grumbled, but his smile lessened the grumpitude. Come on up.
His afro then disappeared back inside the shipping container, and Mama Bee gestured for us to go ahead. I went first so I could help Acrasis, and a slightly wobbly Emma to the top, and then finally I extended my hand for the neon-haired queen. Miss Haystacks, I said gallantly, and helped her steady her sequined feet on the platform, which led into the upper shipping container.
Welcome to my cave, Riggs said, as he lit up a hand-rolled cigarette he pulled out from his fluff of salt-and-pepper hair. Take a seat on the most comfortable couch in the universe, and help yourself to some of last year's hard cider in the mini-fridge.
My jaw nearly hit the ground when we walked into the shipping container that had been converted to a hacker's wet dream. At the far end of the container was a multi-keyboard console complete with four main monitors mounted on the metal wall, as well as three more monitors sitting on top of the desk. Two of the screens were dark, one was constantly running lines of code, and then the four on the wall kept cycling through various CCTV. Some of the locations looked familiar, but for the most part, the Detroit on the monitor still remained alien to me. Riggs sat in the busted office chair that probably used to roll at some point, but the casters were all taken off and probably scattered to the wind. He could still recline back in the leather thing, but it made a terrible wailing sound when he did. He thunked his big-booted heels down onto a circular coffee table, and then he gestured to a hideous lumpy thing the color of pea soup that was apparently the most comfortable couch in the world. The three of us sat on the couch while Mama B came over and perched on one of Riggs's long spider legs. "Cider?" he asked, while he tapped a little brown mini-fridge with his toe as it hummed along with the many banks of computers against the wall. "I'm still stuck on the fact you managed to wire a shipping container with electricity," I said, as my head rotated on a constant swivel. Christmas lights were strung along the top of the walls and added their ambient glow to the computer screens.
"Best solar panels on the market. Well, on the black market, actually," he said in a smooth voice as Mama B handed him the goggles she got from Rat.
He flicked his strange array of eyewear down over his face, tweaked a few extraneous knobs he jerry-rigged to the frames, and then placed my goggles on top of his.
"Now, I know you folks aren't biohackers because you would have never made it past Mama's shotgun, but you do have this fancy piece of tech which tells me you're not just simple commune folk, especially since these have been altered by an expert. It's not easy to remove an iridium chip, but whoever did with these knew what they were doing. Is that you?"
Riggs plucked off the second pair of goggles and stared at me with an arched eyebrow as he held them out.
"No, I wish I could take credit," I said as I took the goggles, folded them up, and stuck them into my pocket.
"That's the work of my friend. He was able to load it up with fake money so we could travel here, and actually we used up almost all of it due to the tolls."
"Yeah, I noticed that."
Riggs smirked and then reached behind him for a remote-looking device on the desk. When he had it, he clicked a few things, and then he flicked the remote in my direction. The sound of a speeding car, followed by a cheery bing, went off in my pocket.
"I just wired you 880 spoof currency, so your total is back up to 999.
"Hey, thanks," I said. "Not that I'm not grateful, but if it's spoof money, then why not wire more?"
"If you stay below 1,000, you're less likely to draw suspicion," Riggs explained, and took a drag of his cigarette before handing it to Mama B. "The CGA discourages traveling long distances, and they get jumpy when people carry more than $1,000 around at a time."
"What's CGA?"
Emma asked from her place between a crisis and me. She seemed to be doing better even though she sagged heavily against my side, and I wondered if she was tired enough to fall asleep. She had kind of been through a lot the past hour, and I could tell by her overly dilated pupils and delayed responses that she was still on the magic school bus, so to speak. I just hoped I could keep her calm and happy until Scoob's weed faded.
"Wow, you really aren't from here, are you?"
Riggs said with a bit of a poleaxed expression. He looked to the diva sitting on his lap for help.
"Who doesn't know what the CGA is?"
Before I could try to explain the whole "we are actually travelers from a parallel Earth" thing again, Mama B glanced at me and then cupped Riggs's gray, stubbled face.
"Remember how we don't make a habit of asking our lost ones their histories before they come to us, sugar?"
she purred as she slid an arm behind the man's neck so she could snuggle a little closer as she replaced the cig between his thick mocha lips.
"Trust me that they're good people who just want to listen and learn before the wind takes them elsewhere."
"Sorry, you're right,"
he said to Divine 2.0 after he took a drag and then kissed her cherry lips with a light smack. Then he focused back on us.
"I'm what they call paranoid. I apologize if I'm being so cagey."
"No need to apologize," I said, and held up a hand. "We all have our reasons for holding back, us included." Riggs nodded respectfully and wrapped one arm around Mama B's waist.
"To answer your question, the CGA stands for Corporate Government of America, and is also the faceless entity people like us battle every day just so we can keep a bit of our own autonomy," the Afro-punk said.
"What happened to the United States of America?" I asked, taken aback.
"It was renamed back in the early 2000s after Gates won the right to basically monopolize the internet," Riggs said with a bitter grimace.
"But the law prevents monopolies, I thought," I said, as I tried to remember my high school civics classes.
"The Sherman Antitrust Act was supposed to, but some say the district court was paid off to overturn the allegations during the Gates case,
And boom, there you go, he said as he shook his head. But that was only the start, Dig. Gates paved the way for other monopolies, and businesses that couldn't monopolize formed cartels built on mutual arrangements in order to restrict competition and drive up consumer prices. Fast forward to now, where you can't even shit in a toilet that's not sponsored by one of the big three, and laws are being made by the same people that cram GMO chicken and beef down our throats while turning around and ripping the food right out of your mouth as they drive up taxes. What's next? They're going to start watering our crops with Gatorade? So, that must be the major split between my universe and this one. Back in my own United States, Bill Gates was actually ordered to break up his company to prevent the quick death of other third-party companies like Apple that wanted to compete with their own operating systems and internet browsers. I should know all of this based on the fact this was the only thing Saul would admit that the government did partially right, as long as he was verschnicked, three sheets to the wind on Manischewitz, that is. Here it seemed as if money allowed Gates to eel his way into this snowball monopoly effect where the people were being crushed under the heels of anti-moral corporate crony capitalism. Yikes, that was pretty fucking bleak. Knowing there blessedly wasn't a version of me in this universe was really the only silver lining. No wonder AOL is still a thing, I remarked. Don't even get me started on AO fucking L, Riggs growled. I will definitely not, I said peaceably. But what about you guys? How are you able to get by with your system and not be forced to kowtow to the cancerous corporate conglomerate?
Cancerous. I like your style, kid, Riggs grunted, and bent over so he could grab two ciders out of the mini-fridge and then handed one to me.
I flipped up the metal latch and uncorked it so I could take a swallow of the fruity, yeasty brew.
This is fantastic, I said, and let Emma have a little sip while Acrasis preferred to observe.
Thanks, Riggs said,
and handed his bottle to Mama B so she could take a swig.
But to answer your question, it's the container house that keeps us going. In the shipping container below us are my banks of servers. They are unsullied by Iridium hardware made in Microsoft factories, and they allow us to conduct business through the black market, trading seeds and stuff to people who don't want to be choked out anymore and want to live free and for themselves.
We're sitting on a whole shipping container full of servers? I asked and looked around. How are we not roasting alive in this metal box? They must be pouring out heat.
Our wastewater is carried out through the plumbing under the foundation, and the metal floor of the shipping unit was replaced with copper in order to conduct the heat away, Riggs said.
Is it illegal to live off the grid like you do? I asked with a frown.
Not technically, but the average person can be sued by Monsanto just for starting an herb garden, or by Nestle for collecting a bit of rainwater because self-sustaining hurts the corporation, and therefore you are hurting the nation, Riggs explained. However, Magpie Mansion remains in the historic district and was able to be grandfathered in when Detroit's policies changed. The thought was that people would eventually cave and sell out to CGA's conglomerates for their necessities as it became harder and harder to do anything without being wired through a NAM shub. But if you bowed down to the beast, you were automatically put on file, and any taxes you previously owe are due immediately before they leverage things like cars and other assets. And if you don't have those, they move on to leveraging your loved ones.
My God, how? I said, as I started to form an even darker picture of this current universe.
Well, let's say you manage to live a few years off the grid due to savings, Riggs said, and lit up another cigarette. But then your savings vanish because you can't get a job unless you have an AOL email and a registered Microsoft device like the NAM shub. So you cave and decide, hey, if I can't beat him, I might as well join him. But then, when you get ready to enter society, wait a minute. There's all of these back taxes you owe CGA. There's no way you can pay the IRS what they want when they want it. And you have no assets or credit accumulated from when you were living dark. Therefore, CGA will leverage the people you care about until they either get their money or you're in indentured servitude.
You're talking about modern slavery, I said, and took another swallow of cider. At that moment, I wished it was something a lot stronger.
Slavery in the most insidious way possible. You heard of Quicken Loans?
Kind of impossible not to, but I just thought they were a mortgage lending company, I said.
They're that, but they also hand out loans for back taxes, and that's how the government gets away with enslaving the poor.
The Afro-punk exhaled a long, smoky drag, and the silvery ribbons curled and coiled like shackles in the glow of the Christmas lights.
You see, the government won't actually go after you. They'll just make it impossible for anyone with even a close enough affiliation to you to do things like go to school or apply for their own mortgage until you pay the IRS. So people turn to private lenders like Quicken to lift the liens from the government. But guess who the government is in the CGA? Corporations that make up that cancerous conglomerate of yours and turn lobbying into an Olympic sport.
And let me guess, one of those cancers is Quicken Loans, I stated.
Give the boy a gold star,
Mama Bee sing-songed and glugged down the rest of the cider in her hand.
Fuck, that's messed up, I sighed, and ran a frustrated hand through my black curls.
Fucking indeed, man, Riggs said, and shook his head again. It's those fuckers as well as the AOL bastards that send their corporate biohackers to try and infect my software.
Excuse me, Mr. Riggs, do you mind explaining what a biohacker is?
Emma's sweet voice piped up, and she lifted her head from where she had laid it against my shoulder some time ago. I thought she fell asleep, but she had actually been following the conversation the whole time.
I was accused of being one not too long ago, and I want to know exactly what it was I was being accused of.
A biohacker is an indentured corporate worker who has allowed accelerated GMO processes to alter their bodies so they can be utilized like living computer programs who can execute commands, download data, and upload software with a touch of their finger, Riggs explained. If one were to get in here, they could completely shut Magpie Mansion down with a single upload of the NamShub software. Once that shit's inside, it automatically uses GPS to scan the property, and then everyone on the premises pops up on the grid whether they want to be or not. You can imagine how closely guarded some of the people who flock to us are, and how traumatizing it would be for the government to rip their secrets to shreds.
Yeah, I understand, I said, as I glanced at my two weird girlfriends, one of whom was an actual alien I'm sure a governmental scientist would love to see on his dissection table. All the more reason to try to keep on the DL about the parallel universe thing from now on.
Hang on, wait a minute. Why in the world were you mistaken as one of those soulless golems?
The Afro-punk asked as he arched an eyebrow in Emma's direction.
Well...
Emma shifted her eyes toward mine as if asking for permission to tell about her powers, as if she didn't demonstrate to all and sundry by zapping a hole through a chain-link fence. Basically... My girlfriend can make electricity come out of her fingers, I told the man, and watched his face go from curious to disbelieving. She's not a hacker. It's something she was born with, and she demonstrated this when she hiccuped a hole through your strawberry wall.
You're joking, Riggs said, as his still-burning cigarette hung from his parted lips.
I saw it with my own eyes, baby,
Mama Bee confirmed.
Can I see?
Riggs asked. And then he snatched the cigarette from his mouth so he could stub it out on an old coffee can.
Well, I don't see why not,
Emma shrugged, but she still looked to me for guidance. Maybe a small one, I told her, and squeezed her tightly clasped hands. Just remember, we're all in a metal box.
Right,
she said, and opened her hand palm up.
Just a small one.
Then a neon blue arc of electricity looped between her fingers as if it was dancing a strange erratic jig before hissing out almost as quickly as it came.
Hey, Mama, Riggs said with his eyes wide and his mouth slack. Remember that plan we had?
The one where we blow up Quicken Loans?
The yellow-haired diva asked.
Yeah,
said the older Afro-punk as he stared hopefully at Emma.
I think I've found our missing linchpin.